A new poll shows former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina surging to third place in the Republican presidential field after last week's debate. This poll also had Donald Trump falling 9 points. This week on the campaign trail, we will talk about women and politics and the women in the 2016 presidential race and the role that gender issues and women's issues will play in the race. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, August 13th. Our guest is Diane Bystrom. She is the director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. She is the co-author, co-editor, and contributor to several books on women and politics. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. Joy, glad to be here.
So Carly Fiorina is in third place now, according to the latest Rasmussen poll. Is this some, do you think, just because of her stellar debate performance that everybody was talking about last week, or is there more to it?
Well, I do think it's part because of the debate performance. There's been some shift in the polls since those debates last week. She was in what they called the happy hour debate, and, you know, I predicted that someone was going to come out of that debate with some legs, and it happened to be Fiorina. I was live tweeting, actually, during both debates, and I think she gave a very good debate performance. Actually, she had been, did a very good debate in New Hampshire, I think, a day before that, which was not a nationally televised debate. But again, and she's received praise also for her appearances on national television, in which she actually answers questions and is very direct. And, you know, and so I think that's what's happening. So I think she's been getting some good media buzz. I mean, she was always kind of that sort of disciplined candidate on the campaign trail. I've seen her speak a couple of times, very disciplined, very direct, a good speaker, answers questions, stays within time frames. And so I think, you know, that's come out not only in the debate, but also in some of her media interviews.
Yeah. Was it just that she, what made her debate showing so strong? Everybody said that she just walloped all the rest in the happy hour debate.
Well, I think, from my perspective, I watched both debates, and again, she answered the questions. She was clear and concise. You know, she didn't try to dodge any questions. She got in some jabs, not only at Donald Trump, but Hillary Clinton. You know, I would say that her closing argument could have been a little stronger, and that's just because I feel like in your closing statement, you should talk about what you're going to do, and she spent a lot of time attacking Clinton in her statement. But that could have worked for her with, you know, some of those Republicans, you know, responding to those polls. But she was just very direct, and again, she didn't ramble. And I think the fact that she really seemed to be answering questions as opposed, and she has a very precise communication style. You know, Donald Trump has actually criticized it, but she, she doesn't wander around. She's very specific. She's concise. She's direct. And I think it really set her apart from some of the other candidates that seemed to kind of roam around in their answers and not be as articulate as she was.
Yeah, so Carly Fiorina is, according to some newspaper articles, she is the GOP candidate to watch. Do you agree?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think, again, she made a strong showing. She really rocketed up in the polls. I mean, I think if you look at her, and John Kasich has been doing pretty well, too, from, the later debate. I think his numbers are going up as well. So I do think she's the person to watch. I think she's a good campaigner. It's interesting. She reminds me a little bit of Joni Ernst, who is our senator from Iowa, the first woman that we've elected in Iowa to the U.S. Congress. And she had a very direct, she's very disciplined. And I see that in Fiorina as well. They're just very disciplined communicators. And I think, you know, that serves you well on the campaign trail.
Aside from a failed Senate run in 2010, she has no political experience. What are the pros and cons of being an outsider like that?
Well, I think right now, you know, with the partisanship that we see in Washington and the fact that, you know, the parties can't seem to work together to get a lot done, that, you know, people are looking for outsiders. And so I think right now being an outsider, you know, helps. I mean, we haven't elected an outsider as president in a long, long time, maybe since Dwight Eisenhower. I can't remember when. But I think, the outsider status, I think, does help her with an electorate that's just kind of disgusted with politics as usual in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Do we want a CEO in charge of the country, too?
Well, we might. You know, again, I think time will tell. I mean, like I said, we a lot of times we say that we want an outsider, or voters say that they don't want politics as usual, but then over and over again we elect as our president either, you know, former governors, former senators, current senators. And so, you know, our record as a country is that we do elect people with political experience. But I think an outsider status, again, it appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah. So what about what strengths and weaknesses does she possess in terms of being a woman on the campaign trail?
Well, what I've seen with Carly Fiorina, we had her as a speaker at Iowa State. She was a speaker. We hosted her at the Cat Center in October of 2008. And what I've seen really over that time, and just listening to her now, and I think looking at her campaign in California, is that she's seemed to, she's positioned herself much more conservatively than when I first heard her speak. She really came off when she visited Iowa State is really more of a moderate on lots of issues, including immigration, which she actually talked about a little bit when she gave her presentation at Iowa State. And she also, talked about avoiding certain social issues, for Republicans, to be more big tent. So I do think she's gotten more conservative. So I think what she'll need to do is, align those issues. Women's issues are going to come up in the campaign, and just because she's a woman candidate doesn't mean she's not going to be criticized for positions on issues that women and men feel strongly about. So I think that's going to be her biggest hurdle, I think.
Yeah. Her closing statement in that debate, here she said, Hillary Clinton lies about Benghazi, she lies about emails, she is still defending Planned Parenthood, and she is still her party's front runner. 2016 is going to be a fight between conservatism and a Democrat party that is undermining the very character of this nation. You said that you don't think she should have spent so much time criticizing Hillary, but what else do you make of that closing statement?
Well, I think she's, again, positioning herself on the more conservative end of the Republican Party. I mean, the Republican Party has become increasingly more conservative since 1980, and certainly positioning herself like any Republican is doing right now. That's actually what Mitt Romney did, the last time around. And so, I think positioning yourself now as a very conservative, and I do think it'll probably, whoever the Republican nominee is going to be, I think it is going to be, as Carly Fiorina says, a fight between conservative values of the Republican Party and the values of the Democratic Party. So I do think it's going to come down to a battle like that, and it really sort of did in 2012, although, Romney tried to tack back more to the center. So that will be the interesting thing to see, because this reminds me a lot of 4 years ago with, everybody, we're at a stage in the primary now where it's really the activists that are really excited right now. The primary stage, the caucus stage coming up, and so the Republican candidates are, appealing to the most activists of their party would tend to be the more conservatives, while the Democrats are, appealing to the more activists in their party that tend to be more liberal. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now.
Talk some about Planned Parenthood and the videos, and now the call from Republicans in Congress to defund Planned Parenthood. Hillary Clinton supports Planned Parenthood. Apparently, Carly Fiorina does not. Donald Trump yesterday made some comments that raised some eyebrows. He said he does not approve of Planned Parenthood's role in providing abortions, but he said Planned Parenthood does good things for women, and he was speaking out against defunding Planned Parenthood because of the other services it provides for women who need them. What do you think of all this?
Well, actually, I'm almost surprised I'm going to say this, but I think that's a very rational opinion of Donald Trump, and I think that does go to the heart of it, of understanding it, is that I think the whole debate over Planned Parenthood, has been obscured by the debate over the fetal tissue and whether it should, in using it for research. It reminds me of the debate back in the, I think it was 1996 or earlier about partial birth abortion. And so, no one really wants to talk about, those sides of this issue. But the bigger issue with Planned Parenthood is that abortion is very small, I think 3% of their services. And if you look at it, I think I saw a poll. Well, first of all, polling, even after the videos were released, shows that over 52% of Americans support Planned Parenthood and are against defunding it. And so, I think the majority of people that go to Planned Parenthood, and that includes, a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats, I think 1 in 5 women have gotten services from Planned Parenthood, and most of them are for, cancer screenings, those types of things that they get services for. And so I thought, actually Trump's comment was fairly rational.
We will talk more about the role of various women's issues and the role of gender on the campaign trail. And welcome your thoughts and questions. How significant do you think women's issues will be in the 2016 presidential race? We'll talk some when we get back from our news break about the war on women, the so-called war on women, and the controversy that Donald Trump has been having with Fox News and Megyn Kelly. And we'll welcome, again, any thoughts or questions you have about gender issues and women in politics. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about gender issues and women in politics during this edition of On the Campaign Trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Diane Bystrom, director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. She is the co-author, co-editor, and contributor to several books on women in politics. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Gary on Facebook says, I don't recall the oath of office saying anything about catering to the perceived emotional needs of particular political identity groups, and this is why these issues will not play a major role in choosing the next president, regardless of what these groups may wish to believe. So, Diane Bystrom, what's your reaction to that?
Well, if there can... If they're including women as one of these groups, I think that the research shows that issues that are important to women are important in presidential politics. That's because of something known as the gender gap. Really, since the 1980s, women and men have voted differently when it comes to president and actually in most other races at the federal level, with women tending to favor the Democratic candidate and men favoring the Republican candidate. So on one hand, it looks like the gender gap is equal because you've got women going one way and men the other, but it really isn't equal because there's more women in the population, more women are registered to vote, and more women actually show up to vote. So the gender gap, especially if it gets into double digits like it did in 2012 with women favoring Obama by 10 percentage points more than men, it translated into millions of votes and, won him the election. And certainly, I would say that there have been times in history, 1996, for example, that if, that year, President Clinton had a huge gender gap, it was 10 or 11 points, and again, if women did not have the right to vote in 1996, then Bob Dole would have been president. So, I do agree with identity politics, and you can't really just get down to the minutiae on every single group wanting this or that, but there are issues that are important in the campaign. There are issues that are important to women. There are issues that are important to men. Mm-hmm. There's issues that are important to Latinos and African Americans. And so, people tend to vote, on those values.
Yeah. So what are some of the women's issues that could determine the next president of the United States?
Well, the interesting thing about women's issues, and survey research bears this out, it's not just what we consider the so-called quote-unquote women's issues. It's not just things like pay equity or Planned Parenthood or reproductive choice. It's not, or violence against women. I mean, it's not just those issues. It's actually that women and men see other issues, such as the economy, health care, war, through a different lens. And women, really in general, favor a more activist government, which of course is identified with the Democratic Party, while men favor a more limited government. So it's just not the so-called women's issues, but it's also how they see the issues of, relating to them. That's kind of what fuels the gender gap. The reason behind it typically is seen to be the still different economic status between women and men in this country. They still, women still earn less money on the dollar than men do, and so they favor, more activism in their government rather than a limited government.
Mm-hmm. So do we know if more women voters support Hillary Clinton than the other candidates that are running?
Well, it's we don't know at this point, because there really haven't been a lot of polls that I've seen that have broken things down for gender. You know, certainly there are, I think, a group of women that are very staunch supporters of Clinton because they feel that they were cheated in 2008. And I think we still have those women around that really want to make history by electing a woman president. And so I do think that there's a strong component within primarily the Democratic Party and perhaps some independent women that are interested in Clinton because she's a woman. But, you know, women overall are going to tend to even support Democratic male candidates. There were some surveys a couple years ago that seemed to show that if it was a Democratic woman running against a Republican man, that was the highest favorite level among women to vote for that person. But then the next favorite was a Democratic man versus a Republican man, and then the next was a Democratic man versus a Republican woman. So the women issue was a little bit muted in that, but still women favoring the Democratic candidate.
Yeah, I didn't hear a Democratic woman versus a Republican woman.
Yes, and that's because there's been so little, there's been so few to study with that. And so when that research was done, it was several years ago.
Yeah.
And there just really haven't been as many races. This is at the U.S. Senate level, by the way. And so there have been some races that are female versus female. I think in 2012, I actually studied that and actually wrote a book chapter on it. And we didn't really find any differences in their media coverage. But I think that year there was like 11 female versus female Senate races. So it's never really been a very high number. But it's getting better, and people are studying it more.
Fiorina has, on the other hand, accused Hillary Clinton of playing the gender card in her campaigning. Is there such a thing as campaigning too much as a woman?
Well, if so, we haven't seen it yet. Most women are very, very cautious about campaigning as I'm the woman candidate. And you actually saw that in 2008 with Clinton. In fact, I do think she's playing on gender more this time around than she was last time. I don't think it's really a gender card. I think she's talking more openly about making history if she is elected as the first woman president. I don't see that as playing the gender card. The gender card, also could be said to be played by the Republicans. And in my view, the gender card is played in every election, and it's played not only by women, but it's played by the men running for president.
Yeah. Let's back to the debate. Fox News anchor and debate moderator Megyn Kelly asked Donald Trump a question that made lots of headlines. She said, that Donald Trump has been known to call women derogatory names like fat pig and other things, and asked how he could defend himself when Hillary Clinton would accuse him of being a part of the war on women. First off, did you think that was a fair question?
I thought it was a fair question. I mean, it seemed to be a little hard-hitting. I do think in some ways, I thought it was a fair question. I mean, obviously, I think he's opened it up to that criticism. So I thought it was a fair question. The thing, about that debate and when it gets so large is that, it's hard to me to judge or get a lot out of debates when not every candidate is asked the same question.
Yeah.
So that was the type of debate where everybody was asked a different question. So I think it does open up to charges that not everyone got as tough as questions as other people. On the other hand, Donald Trump is a front runner. Front runners should anticipate the toughest questions during a debate, if that's the format. And so I did think it was a fair question based on what he said before and based on the fact that, there was very much, I think, at least a rhetorical strategy in 2008 by not only the Democratic Party and President Obama, but also, I think, helped by media coverage about the so-called Republican war on women. So I thought it was a fair question.
Yeah. And so Trump has refused to apologize for his comments. I guess explain if people hadn't heard that he then also made comments that Megyn Kelly, he said, was asked a very hostile, angry question, and that she had blood coming out of her eyes or blood coming out of her wherever. He was then disinvited from a conservative group's presidential candidate forum after making those remarks. He then tried to say, well, I didn't mean anything. I didn't mean to say she was being hormonal or whatever. First of all, how big of a deal do you think that spat was?
Well, it seems to be clear that it seems like Trump and Fox News have made up now and are friends again. And so Megyn Kelly has also said she's not going to back down. Trump has said he's not going to back down. You know, when he was disinvited from the Red State Forum, he actually criticized the host of that. And so, you know, I think, you know, it seems right now that I do think his rhetoric has been a little bit more temperate since that happened. I mean, he seems to be a little bit more tempered in his remarks, not, and maybe the Planned Parenthood remarks had something to, maybe that has something to do with, you know, reaching out to women on that issue. But it seems like he's made up with Fox News, from what I can tell. He's back on Fox News, and in Fox News, you know, they both need each other.
What about will Trump's comments turn off women?
Well, I think so. I mean, right now, it's really hard to tell because we're in the primary stage, and he does seem to have this core group of supporters that no matter what he says or does, they like him. But I think as the field winnows, those votes are going to go somewhere, and I don't know that they're going to go to Donald Trump. I think that they'll be picked up by some of the other candidates. You know, as candidates drop out of the race and when there's fewer people in the race, then I think we'll see the percentages go up with some of the other candidates. I think where it would be a problem, and again, one thing that, you know, we mentioned Carly Fiorina, she actually has capitalized, I think, on Trump's remarks. I mean, she tweeted out, there is no excuse, with periods after each word, you know, after what he said about Megyn Kelly. I think I subscribe to emails from all the candidates, so I see stuff that she sends out, and as well as some of the other candidates. And I think it was earlier this week, I got an email from her campaign that had a picture of the men that were in the second primetime debate with a caption that says, "What's wrong with this picture?" And so, you know, she is, I think, capitalizing in her fundraising and also in her rhetoric, you know, on Trump's remarks.
Yeah, I think Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin also was asked about this and just recently made comments that he would never use the kind of language that that Trump used. So people distancing themselves somewhat from that. But there was a Reuters article that went into how Trump's supporters, women supporters, disregarded his comments about Megyn Kelly, and in some cases they even defended him. What kind of female support does Trump actually have?
Well, he's got Trump for Women, because every once in a while they like some of my tweets, and so there's a group called Trump for Women. Actually, I was listening to several of the stations on Friday night, Fox, CNN, and MSNBC, and I believe it was on MSNBC that they had a guest from the New Hampshire Trump for Women, and she defended Donald Trump and, in fact, said that she wasn't going to, you know, watch Fox News anymore because of Megyn Kelly. You know, to kind of go forward a little bit with your last question, though, is that I do think that if Donald Trump becomes the eventual Republican nominee, you know, you will see these comments again in television ads taken out not only by the Democratic Party, perhaps the Democratic presidential candidate, but certainly by progressive PACs. And so I, too, you know, I think where we'll see the impact of those comments will really be in the general election if he is the nominee. I think we also may see it in some upcoming debates. You know, as a person who has studied debates, I was really surprised, and it's interesting, you know, to hear that Scott Walker now, right after these, you know, comments were made, certainly Fiorina came out first, and then you saw Bobby Jindal, I think Jeb Bush, now Scott Walker, and some people, you know, have refused to say anything about it. I saw interviews with Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz where they didn't want, and Mike Huckabee, that they didn't want to talk about those remarks. They wanted to talk about their agenda. But I thought it was interesting from a debate perspective is that not one of those other male candidates on stage used one of their questions to attack Trump, or at least to say something to Megyn Kelly. And when you study debates, I mean, that's something that you'd look for when you're a debater, as an opening. And so not one of the, I think Carly Fiorina would have taken that opening, because all that happens is that when you get your next question, you say, well, before I, you know, answer that question, I want to say, Megyn Kelly, that I, you know, agree, you know, I think those are disparaging remarks about women, and I would never make them. You know, that could have been a Scott Walker moment. That could have been a Bobby Jindal moment. And they didn't take it. And I think Fiorina might have.
Yeah, interesting. They're maybe afraid of him because Scott Walker's fundraising arm put out a an email that that made some sort of remark about Trump making dumb comments, and Trump went after Walker. So he took the gloves off then and started attacking Walker's economic record in Wisconsin. So some of those men up on the stage might have been afraid to go after him.
Yeah, I mean, Trump says that if someone hits me, I'm going to hit back. And so, that's the downsides of it, getting struck back. But I do think that, and maybe Fiorina is uniquely positioned to do that. I mean, although she said some things and Trump has hit her back, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump has said things about her voice and about herself. And so, so if you hit Trump, he's going to hit back.
Clinton called Trump's remarks outrageous, but also said she wanted to focus on what the Republican male candidates had to say about abortion. Abortion is going to be a tricky issue for Republicans?
Well, I think so. It's interesting to me because I've been studying political advertising in presidential races since 1992. And really, it wasn't until 2012 that I even saw any ads in the presidential race that even mentioned reproductive choice. And so it's typically an issue that that neither party really campaigns on in their political advertising because it's still a divisive issue. You've got the country divided over whether or not they support if they're pro-choice or anti-abortion, and what kind of legal ramifications is it, no abortions, or is it in the case of rape and incest? And so it's still an issue that divides a lot of people in our country. So typically, candidates aren't talking about it in their political ads. They might be talking about it in their stump speeches and certainly in their fundraising, but not in their ads. And so it was effective for the Democratic Party in 2012 actually to speak about things like Planned Parenthood, pay equity, and references to reproductive choice or a women's right to choose in their ads. There's actually been some research that came out after that campaign in one of the books that I was editing after the 2012 election that compared really targeted strategies by President Obama and Mitt Romney for women. And you might recall that Obama took out a number of ads attacking Romney for his positions on Planned Parenthood, but also Romney then took out ads basically trying to appeal to women on the issue of the economy. And what the research showed is that women, both Democrats and Republicans, and this was a large sample, I think it was over 500, but they're mainly college students, but they're across the country, and they range in age from 17 to 40. So it was a pretty good mix, but again, it was a sample of college students that took that watched, that did a favorability test on the candidates and then watched these targeted ads. And what they found is that women that not only identified as Democrats, but also Republicans and Independents, were more convinced by Obama's ads that were about the issues of Planned Parenthood, pay equity, reproductive choice than the Romney ads on the economy. And so that was an interesting finding from that campaign. And so I think we're going to see the war on women again maybe used in 2016. I don't think it's going to be called the war on women. I think if you hear Clinton right now, she seems to be referring to these issues more as family issues, and I think that we might see it more enlarged. And it's not, and the war on women really didn't work in 2014, and so it kind of backfired on Democrats trying to use it. So I don't know if we'll really hear war on women, but I do think we're going to see these as part of issues affecting families.
Yeah, we just have a minute to go before a news break. George emails, does your guest have any information on the poll data of candidate preferences for women Republicans? I think he means which Republican candidates have the most support from women?
I don't know that we have any. Again, there haven't been a lot of polls that have broken things down by gender. Republican women, it's an interesting party for women because there tend to be, in the Republican Party, people that identify themselves as moderates in the Republican Party tend to be more women than men. And so that's a statistic that's come out over several years of polling. And so if you look at the Republican Party, those on the more moderate end of the party tend to be more women than men. But there is a rising of conservative women within the party, Joni Ernst being one of them, our senator from Iowa, but also Deb Fisher from Nebraska. And so that end of the part, you know, the conservative women are rising up. So, you know, in general, I think that Republican women tend to be overall less focused on the social issues that divide us from divide them from the Democrats and more focused on economic issues.
We are talking with Diane Bystrom, director of the Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. And we're talking about women and politics on the campaign trail. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Every week at this time, we talk about issues making news on the campaign trail. And we have been spending most of our time on gender issues on the campaign trail with our guest, Diane Bystrom, who is the director of the Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University and the co-author, co-editor, and contributor to several books on women in politics. But we will also expand out now to some other issues making news on the campaign trail, and we will welcome any thoughts or questions you have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We had Victor in West Allis who wanted to say that he thought Carly Fiorina would be a good candidate because of her work with Hewlett-Packard, meaning that she would know how to navigate you know, fast-changing businesses and a fast-changing world. But then Donna on Facebook said, seriously, how can a woman that failed so hard at running a company think she can run a country? So, Diane Bystrom, maybe just kind of wrapping up a little bit on Carly Fiorina, is her experience as a CEO going to help or hurt her?
Well, I think certainly some people will bring up the fact that she was fired by Hewlett-Packard as maybe one of her failures. But it's really kind of interesting. Again, we had her as a speaker after she had left Hewlett-Packard, and she actually has written a book about her experiences at Hewlett-Packard. And I can tell you from someone who's also studied women in business and CEOs, there's not very many women CEOs. They're under a lot of scrutiny. They face some of the same gender barriers that women in politics face, and so the fact that she was, you know, fired by Hewlett-Packard is a little bit it's not as clear cut as someone might think as failing the company. There's a little bit more than that. She got into, I think, crosswise with the board of directors and all sorts of things, and so. But certainly, I think, you know, basically, your two Facebook comments kind of show each side of the issue. You know, she was at the beginning of Hewlett-Packard very successful in running that corporation and had a record, a strong record as a woman in business in leadership. But then again, she was fired by Hewlett-Packard, so that's something that people will bring up. I do think her time at Hewlett-Packard, there she did have some successes there as well as failures, and so it's not as clear cut as, you know, one would imagine. And actually, her book about it, which I've read, is really pretty interesting about, you know, her rise at Hewlett-Packard and her. You know, she started out with a degree, but also started out as a secretary. So, you know, it's kind of similar experiences I see with other women that have reached the level of CEO on what their careers have been.
Interesting. Well, and James on Facebook then chimed in. The same can be said for Trump. What has he had? Four bankruptcies?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think when you're in business, and again, those of us who aren't in CEOs or not in high-level business, I've spent most of my life in academia, and sometimes we don't understand that, you know, highly successful business people oftentimes have failures as well as successes, and Trump is another example of that.
Yeah. We have Scott in Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to put in a plug for, like, second and third parties, for instance, like the Green Party. They might have Jill Stein running again for president. She's run before, and the Green Party's had Cynthia McKinney run the 4 years before that. There's a couple other smaller parties that have been able to win the Electoral College that have had women run for president as well. And the last time that Jill Stein ran, her vice presidential candidate was also a woman. Running, so I wanted to comment on second and third parties and women there.
Good question.
Yes, yeah, so actually we've had from the very beginning, from the Equal Rights Party back in the 1900s, we've had women run for the presidency, and I think it does, again, expand the voices of people running for president. It gives options to people who do not want to vote for one of the major party candidates, and we actually have a strong record in this country, like Scott says, of women running for president in these second and third tier parties. And again, I think it just expands the narrative, especially if they can get the media coverage. Oftentimes they don't get the same amount of media coverage at all. If they did, it would really, I think, expand the narrative about what we're talking about for the country.
Are third parties greener pastures for women candidates?
Yes, I think they tend to be. They're less traditional. They're I think they have more gendered opportunities. I was actually a year ago at this time, I was actually in Sweden doing a site visit for a study abroad program, and they were actually having it was a time in Sweden where they were not only electing people to their electing their parliament, but also the Stockholm City Council. So that only occurs about every 20 years, and so it was really interesting to see the diversity of people running. They have a system there that they elect, to the parliament, people from about 8 different political parties. And so one thing I saw, one of the interesting things I saw, especially for someone who studies political advertising, is that a lot of the European countries, they really limit not only the amount of money spent on political advertising, but when you can advertise on TV. And so we were there one particular Sunday where all these posters came up of the candidates, because that's the first thing that they could do. And so they had posters of the candidates, and they were large posters. And it was remarkable to me to see how many women were running in the various parties and how many young people. And so that's one thing that struck me. Then it was interesting, though, because they have negative advertising. So, like, the next day, people had paid in clown noses on some of the candidates or had money coming out of their mouths. And so I guess that was their form of negative advertising. But it was really interesting to see. And again, when you have that kind of a parliamentary system that they have in several countries, I think it really opens up opportunities for women. And we don't have the same kind of system here. And so, we, I think, have more opportunities for women in some of these second and third tier parties, but they don't get the same kind of attention, and they certainly don't get the same kind of electoral support here because just of our system of government.
Well, let me, that reminds me of another issue on the campaign trail. I saw a news story that that Bernie Sanders is now polling higher than Hillary Clinton in a New Hampshire poll, and Bernie Sanders supporters are all excited by this. What do you make of Bernie Sanders' surge and or the huge crowds that he's gathering, and is he going to pose a serious threat to Hillary Clinton's chances of gaining the Democratic nomination?
Well, I think a couple of things are happening. With the New Hampshire poll, it had a very large margin of error, so it really wasn't statistically significant. So I wouldn't put it was one state, and it had a large margin of error. So, again, not to poo-poo it, but I do think it's something that the Clinton supporters should recognize, because he's pulled himself up to at least equal or maybe slightly ahead of her in New Hampshire. New Hampshire tends, I think, the Democrats there tend to be more left-leaning than they are in Iowa, and she's still polling strong in Iowa, which, of course, is the other early caucus or primary state. I think the other thing that, quite frankly, is happening in the Democratic Party is two other things, and one is I think a lot of the Democrats at this point in time, they want an exciting race like we have in the Republican side. They just don't want to have it be a cakewalk for Hillary Clinton. So I think there's some excitement in the Democratic Party, and the large turnout for Bernie Sanders is that they want to have some excitement there. They want to have a race, and I think that's part of it. And then the third thing is that truly people are backing Sanders because they see him as more liberal and progressive than Clinton. And so I think, again, we're in that phase of the campaign is where, the activists on both sides of the equation, and that is the most conservative Republicans and the most liberal Democrats, are, driving a lot of the campaign events right now. That's where the enthusiasm is coming from. So I think, some of it is very sincere for Sanders, as an alternative to Clinton. I don't see him, though, being the nominee.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton took a shot at Governor Walker this week in New Hampshire over his cuts to higher education. She said something along the lines of Governor Walker, was delighted at cutting education. What message do you think she's trying to send to voters?
I think she's doing a couple things, and it really kind of relates to a question that we talked about earlier, is that she's kind of figuring out who might be the Republican nominee. And I think she's trying to come out. I think her, for example, I'm not sure that she was a, this was the context she was attacking Governor Walker, but, you know, she's come out with this new student debt plan. And so she's got this plan for reducing, you know, student debt, which is a real issue. I mean, I'm on a college campus, and it's an issue in Iowa. It's an issue at Iowa State about how much debt these students are amassing. It takes them years to pay off. And so I think it's a good issue for Clinton to talk about, because I do think it resonates with young people, and I think she's trying to reach out to young people so she can have the same kind of turnout and support that Obama did in 2008 with the younger citizens. But I think those issues are also a way where she can then compare herself with some of the Republican candidates. You know, from what I understand, you know, Walker, I mean, there's a lot of states in this nation where the state has cut down on higher ed, you know, not just Wisconsin, but also Illinois, where they're having lots of problems. In Iowa, you know, we didn't get a budget cut, but we didn't get the kind of increase that covered things, and so we actually do have a budget cut at Iowa State, or we have a budget shortfall because we don't have enough money to, you know, cover fixed costs. So I think it's a way that she delineates herself from other Republican candidates. And getting back to that, one of the things I think she's done with this whole Trump issue and then trying to focus a larger spotlight is that she did say that, you know, let's not just focus on Trump, let's focus on what the other Republican candidates were saying during the debate. And she, you know, specifically, you know, spoke about Marco Rubio and his, you know, positions on abortion, which, again, I think that gives her an opportunity. You know, one of the things that this whole Trump thing does is it really puts a spotlight on the other candidates on women's issues. And so I think, you know, I think Clinton will take advantage of that.
Yeah. We have just a minute or so to go. Do you think, what do you think will be Hillary Clinton's Achilles heel?
Well, I think, you know, you're seeing it now. It's basically the trust issue. Excuse me. You know, I think, you know, you're seeing that with the emails right now. You know, but I think, you know, what I've also seen is her campaign has reached out, you know, to explain those issues to her supporters. I think it'll give fodder for people who don't support her over those. So I think the thing with Clinton mostly is that I think she'll win the nomination. I think it'll be, you know, unless something just comes out that she did something illegal, and it's proven that it's illegal, I think she'll win the nomination. She's, you know, the front runner. You know, as far as winning the White House, I think it will be a tougher fight for her. I do think, you know, people have very strong opinions about Hillary Clinton because she's been in the national spotlight for so long. So people either really like her or they really dislike her. And so it'll be, I think, a tough race, who, depending on the Republican nominee is for the White House.
Interesting. Only 30 seconds to go. Do you have any prediction as to who the GOP nomination will go to?
Boy, it's tough.
Not yet.
I don't think it'll be Donald Trump.
There we go. Thank you very much for being with
us.
Welcome. Diane Bystrom is the director of the Center for Women and Politics at Iowa State University. Thanks to Bill Martins, to Elizabeth Deliquis, and to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.